information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care. And it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
The
government believed they were innocent.
They have no idea what they're up against.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Friday the 13th, June 2008. It's episode 79 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Tons to go over today. We got doomsday and peak oil and low dollar equals high gas. Jim Douglas and the unspeakable Kucinich and impeachment. Elitists and the Bilderberg blowout. We got 9/11, hunger, truth rising, Odigo and petitions, Medgar Evers, Puppygate, and the Ron Paul revolution continues, my friends. It's all here on episode 79, June 13th, 2008. It's MediaMonarchy.com.
We'll be right back.
Yeah. The day after the revolution. That's one of my favorite tracks from one of my favorite records. That was Pulp. Going back 11 years from their record, this is Hardcore. And this is MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster. This is episode 79. It's Friday the 13th, June 2008. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 Pacific time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern time on the Revere Radio Network, revereradio.info. And you can also hit me up on MySpace and Dig and YouTube and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword, and hit up iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org for all the downloads of all the podcasts going back almost 2 years now. And so before I head deeper into the show, let's mention to use the site MediaMonarchy.com, because what you hear on the show is just a fraction, and all the links for you to go down your own personal rabbit hole are there on MediaMonarchy.com. Going to give you all the news and politics and conspiracies and cover-ups invading our world. There's a lot to get into, my friends, and I can barely cover it all, so let's dive forward. Top of the page right now, Ron Paul to end campaign outside Texas convention. Well, yes and no. I don't know how many times we've been through this. It seems the media takes glee every time the Ron Paul campaign has morphed and moved and shifted and grown and bobbed and weaved. Always to say, oh, Ron Paul dropped out. Oh, Ron Paul dropped out. Oh, he dropped out. He did and he didn't. He doesn't have the delegates, and that's not going to happen. However, he's not going to come out and say, oh, I quit. Because, as we heard in the intro song, the revolution begins and ends with you. This has never been about Ron Paul. This has been about the message that you're not getting from the phony frontrunners. So, LA Times had it up first. So we'll go through some of this, and we got a little bit of clips to play for you as well. LA Times, the Ron Paul revolution isn't over until Ron Paul says it's over, and he's not done yet. Amid reports that Paul would formally end his presidential campaign, the iconoclastic Texas Republican congressman instead told supporters Thursday night that he intended to lead a campaign for liberty.com movement to give libertarians a bigger say within the GOP. So if we hit up now the Associated Press, this was touting the demise earlier yesterday. Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul will end his campaign Thursday night and announce a new effort to help elect libertarian-leaning Republicans to public offices around the country. Campaign spokesman Jesse Benton said the announcement, expected during a speech outside the Texas Republican Convention, was, quote, not a disappointment at all. I think it's really exciting. And AP has to snidely say Paul's announcement will be a formality. Now, I haven't found any good audio of the speech last night. The only thing I could find so far was bad, bad audio that sounded like it was off a cell phone. So I don't have that yet for you. But we do have a little bit, and we can hear from CNN and the Associated Press on the continuing Ron Paul revolution and the campaign for liberty.
Revolution going on just down the block from the Republican convention in September, and GOP Congressman Ron Paul says you're all invited. He is still technically in the presidential race and planning to compete with the RNC by holding a convention of his own. Congressman Paul joins us now from Washington. Congressman, good to see you again.
Thank you very much. Nice to be with you.
This mini convention in Minneapolis, what's it all about?
Well, first, we're not calling it a convention, and we don't call it mini. We're going to have a rally, and it's a celebration, and we're going to compliment and praise everybody that worked so hard in the past year and move on to the next stage of the revolution. And we think it's going to be a grand rally, and we're looking forward to it, and we think we're going to do quite well. We've already expanded the arena that we're going to hold it in because of the positive reception, and I think we've only started to work on this. So we're very optimistic that we're going to have a a real nice celebration of the views that we've been holding and promoting in this past year.
Yeah, it was only a metaphor because there has been nothing mini about the Ron Paul revolution here. And we're always happy to have you on. What message are you going to send to the folks across the river there who are at the actual convention?
Yeah, there will be a message, and it's going to be different. We're not going to parade. We're not going to march. We're not going to disrupt, and we're not going to demonstrate as much as present a positive case for values that we believe should be the Republican values: limited government, personal liberty, a sensible foreign policy, and a sound monetary system, and promote the Constitution, promote what has made the country great, and really much of what the Republicans claim they stand for. So we're going to just remind the country and the people in the Republican Party, especially the conservative wing of the party, that we don't have to accept big government programs and blending the two parties together where the people don't have an actual choice. And there's a lot of people out there that are looking forward to a message like this.
It may have taken longer than expected, but Ron Paul is officially no longer in the race for the Republican presidential nomination. Paul dropped out Thursday, making the announcement to supporters attending the Republican State Convention in Texas. Despite winning few delegates, the 72-year-old Texas congressman has an immensely loyal following. Paul told supporters his campaign is shifting gears and said it's actually going to accelerate and get much bigger. His campaign says it has nearly $5 million in the bank and will use that as part of Paul's new efforts, which include speaking out against the United Nations and the federal income tax. As proof that his overarching campaign is not over, Paul will host a mini-convention in early September in Minnesota. That will be at the same time as the Republican National Convention, which is taking place in St. Paul. Ron Paul has refused to endorse presumptive Republican nominee John McCain, saying the two differ too much on the issues. Instead, Paul says he will continue to spread his message by working to help elect libertarian-leaning Republicans to public office. John Belmont, the Associated...
So that was Ron Paul on CNN and also the AP touting he dropped out. But they do at least mention that he will continue the fight against not only the income tax, but I think more importantly, the Federal Reserve, which of course is neither. And of course, the UN, built on the bloody land the Rockefellers bought. Now, here's the other bit of interesting audio on the Ron Paul front. I don't even want to read the headline for you. Let's just listen to the clip. It's short.
End the war, they could. The Democrats finally win the election in 2006, and it was a mandate, the Republican gets thrown out. What's the first act that Pelosi does? There was a supplemental bill that had a bill of ours in, and we had gotten it put in, and the bill said, you know, you shouldn't even need a bill like this. It said, you can't go to war with Iran without getting approval from Congress. You know, something, and she removed it. She removed it deliberately, and then... The astounding thing is they asked her why, and she said the leadership in Israel asked her to. I mean, that is how amazing it is that was in the newspaper, and that was in the Washington Post, that she was asked by AIPAC and others not to do that.
There you go. Remember those Democrats... They got voted in the fall of 2006. They were going to end the war and impeach. Pardon my editorial laugh. And you're about to get fooled again. Now, I grabbed this from wesawthat.blogspot.com. Nancy Pelosi pulled Iran bill on orders of AIPAC in a speech given on June 6th in Reston, Virginia at the Hyatt Regency. To the Future of Freedom Foundation, Restoring the Republic 2008 Foreign Policy and Civil Liberties Conference, Congressman Ron Paul tells House Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, acting on orders of Israel and AIPAC, deliberately pulled a supplemental bill requiring congressional approval for attacking Iran, which of course constitutionally it has to be approved by Congress, but oh, we haven't done that since the Korean War. So that's all I got for you right now on the Ron Paul front. But we'll dive a little more into the election a little bit later as we get into the phony front runners and who's pulling the strings. But As a nice little buffer before we get into soldiers killing dogs and assassinations of civil rights activists and anniversaries, let's have a little satire from The Onion, all right?
Good morning. Before I go over the president's schedule, I have a brief announcement. Yesterday, a librarian at the National Archives made the discovery that a Japanese-American internment facility was still in operation in the mountains of Northern California. The facility should have been closed in 1945 and its 6,000 residents released, but unfortunately, the camp was overlooked until this week. I am happy to announce, however, that the remaining 118 detainees have now been fully exonerated of suspicion of spying for General Tojo, and they have been freed. Next item of business. The president will be meeting with the Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. Yes, Denise?
Oversight. How could this have happened?
Well, Denise, it looks like the camp just somehow slipped through the cracks. The end of the Second World War was a hectic time in America, and it's only natural that we let a couple of things slip in our excitement over defeating the Nazis.
What is the state of the survivors?
Well, to answer your question, the remaining residents are all in very good health, considering many of them are well into their 90s. As for those born in the camp over the past six decades, a life without the distraction of television, spent gardening and chopping wood, and so forth, that seems to have done them well.
Are you actually
who's going to be held responsible for this?
No, there won't. In fact, the War Relocation Authority was responsible for the decommissioning of the internment facilities, but that organization ceased to exist in 1946. So, no. Last question. David.
Where are the survivors now?
Most are with relatives.
And the others?
Well, upon learning that the war had been over for six decades, a few individuals made some very clear threats against the United States government, and those individuals are currently being held for questioning.
No. I think what's so great about a lot of the Onion videos is that they're so close to reality. They're just tweaked slightly, and that's what makes for brilliant satire. And not the beat you over the head, right on the nose bullshit of things like Saturday Night Live. So there you go. The Onion. That's their most recent news report from the Onion News Network. U.S. finally closes last World War II internment camp. And so as I started to play that clip, I remembered to tell you why the episode's going to be so willy-nilly. And that's if you've been listening to the show at any time for the last while. You realize about every 4 months you hear me go, I was up all night, I had to work, we do inventory quarterly, so I was up all night, and so my preparation may be sketchy, but I think it's going all right, so let's keep trucking on. Into ugly territory, and interesting territory for what it now proves. So, Associated Press, puppy-killing Marine to be booted, as he should. So, Associated Press, the Marine Corps is expelling one Marine and disciplining another for their roles in a video showing a Marine throwing a puppy off a cliff while on patrol in Iraq. The 17-second video posted on YouTube drew sharp condemnation from animal rights groups when it came to light in March, and from a lot of other people, and we'll get to that. The clip shows two Marines joking before one hurls the puppy into a rocky gully. A yelping sound is heard as it flips through the air. Marine Corps Base Hawaii said in a news release Wednesday that Lance Corporal David Motari, M-O-T-A-R-I, received unspecified non-judicial punishment and is being processed for separation from the Marine Corps. The 2nd Marine Sergeant Chris Marvin Benez Encarnacion, I probably mangled that, but the link is there, also received unspecified non-judicial punishment. So you can link and read about non-judicial punishment. And you can read more about David Motari, whose, I imagine, post-military life will probably be a living hell. Now, I don't know if you recall this when this story was out. We did this in March when this video came out. And, of course, the debate ended up being about whether it was real and whether it wasn't and whether to make a big deal about it or not. So, of course, we got the standard line from, I don't know if Limbaugh weighed in on it or not, but it's the standard line of his ilk of what he said, of course, about the Abu Ghraib torture scandal. He said, oh, it's just like frat boys blowing off steam. In this case of Puppygate, neocons like Michelle Malkin, who actually, speaking of internment camps, she said we should bring them back. But that's a side note. she made lots of apologies for this and tried to say it was fake and yada yada, even though, of course, we were all up in arms many, many years ago when supposedly, oh, I forget, was it Saddam or was it bin Laden? I forget which boogeyman was supposedly torturing dogs with chemical weapons, and that was a big outrageous deal and was supposed to, of course, rile up the masses. But now when our soldiers hurl puppies off cliffs, it was no big deal and it was fake and it was blah, blah, blah. But now we know it's not fake because they've been removed from the Marines. So, let's head up one from Kurt Nemo. Up on InfoWars, Puppy Chuck Video, Michelle, it's time for an apology. Recall neocon blogger and concentration camp apologist Michelle Malkin in huffy denial over the Marine who sadistically chucked a puppy into a ravine while on duty in Iraq. So, Kurt Nemo is basically saying she should put up or shut up. But we have another one. This from Lee Rogers at RogueGovernment.com. Malkin's conspiracy theories proven wrong. The conspiracy theorists over at Michelle Malkin's website, Hot Air, have now been forced to admit that the conspiracy theories they endorsed surrounding the infamous puppy toss video were completely false. And it goes on, but I don't think we have to spend that much more time on it. It's just another example of, I feel like in the media, and this is what one thing I try to expose on this show, is in the media, a lot of times we don't deal with the issues or talk about the issues. We like to talk about how I don't like how you're talking about the issues. And so the actual substance gets moved to the side as we dance around like WWF bullshit. So there you go. 45 years later, Mississippi remembers Medgar Evers. And so this comes from the Biloxi Sun-Herald. And I will be the first to admit that I don't know very much about Medgar Evers, but the story is posted up. And so, as I believe I've said before, the website is as informational and educational and mind-blowing for me as it hopefully is for you. So the links for the research are there. And we're going to hear a little bit of a clip from about a 20-minute video up on YouTube. Murder in Mississippi, the assassination of Medgar Evers. But before we get to that, Medgar Evers once said, "You can kill a man, but you can't kill an idea." So it was 45 years ago, yesterday, my friends, that Evers, the field agent for the Mississippi NAACP, was assassinated outside his Jackson, Mississippi home just hours after leaving the coast, where he had been planning a protest with Dr. Gilbert Mason for June 16, 1963. And of course, it was all in an effort to gain blacks access to Mississippi's public beaches. Evers was shot shortly after midnight on June 12th as he got out of his car and dragged himself to the back door of his home, where he died in front of his wife and three children. Evers' killer, Byron De La Beckwith, was convicted of his murder more than 30 years later in 1994 after Evers' body was exhumed and the bullet tied the suspect to the murder. So let's listen to a small portion of the assassination of Medgar Evers.
A leader in Jackson and throughout the state was Medgar Evers, NAACP State Field Secretary. Evers had supported James Meredith during the battle to integrate the University of Mississippi. For 10 years, he had traveled the state, fighting for racial justice, and now helped organize the NAACP boycott of downtown stores.
Don't shop for anything on Capitol Street. Let's let the merchants down on Capitol Street feel the economic pinch. Let me say this to you. I had one merchant to call me, and he said, I want you to know that I've talked to my national office today, and they want me to tell you that we don't need nigger business. These are stores that help to support the White Citizens Council, the council that is dedicated to keeping you and I second-class citizens. Now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be demonstrating here until freedom comes to Negroes here in Jackson, Mississippi.
Demonstrators were not backing down, and many were being injured. For Medgar Evers, the situation grew more dangerous with every passing day.
It was simply in the air. You knew that something was going to happen, and the logical person for it to happen to was Medgar. I used to try to reassure him and tell him, nothing's going to happen to you. The FBI is here. Laugh. Everybody knows you. You're in the press. They wouldn't dare do anything to you.
On June 11th, 1963, Merle Evers watched at home as President John Kennedy made his strongest speech on civil rights.
It is not enough to pin the blame on others, to say this is a problem of one section of the country or another, or deplore the facts that we face. A great change is at hand, and our task, our obligation, is to make that revolution, that change, peaceful and constructive for all. Those who do nothing are inviting shame as well as violence. Those who act boldly are recognizing right as well as reality.
Late that night he came home. The children were still up. I was asleep across the bed, and we heard the motor of the car coming in and pulling into the driveway. We heard him get out of the car and the car door slam, and in that same instance we heard the loud gunfire. The children fell to the floor as he had taught them to do. I made a run for the front door, turned on the light, and there he was. The force of the bullet had pushed him forward, as I understand, and the strong man that he was, he had his keys in his hand and had pulled his body around the rest of the way to the door. There he lay, and I screamed, and people came out. Our next door neighbor fired a gun, as he said, to try to frighten anyone away, and I knew then that that was it.
Medgar Evers had been shot in the back by a single round from a high-powered rifle. The one fingerprint found on the weapon belonged to Byron De La Beckwith, a member of the Citizens Council in Greenwood, Mississippi. Medgar Evers, 37 years old, died 1 hour later.
We view this as a cold, brutal, deliberate killing in a savage, uncivilized state. The most savage, the most uncivilized state in the entire 50 states. There is no state with a record that approaches that of Mississippi in inhumanity, murder, brutality, and racial hatred. It is absolutely at the bottom of the list.
On June 12, 1963, Evers pulled into his driveway after just returning from a meeting with NAACP lawyers. Emerging from his car and carrying NAACP t-shirts that read, "Jim Crow must go," Evers was struck in the back with a bullet fired from an Enfield 1917-30-06 rifle that ricocheted into his home. He staggered 30 feet before collapsing. He died at a local hospital 50 minutes later. Evers was murdered just hours after President John F. Kennedy's speech on national television in support of civil rights. Mourned nationally, Evers was buried on June 19th in Arlington National Cemetery, where he received full military honors in front of a crowd of more than 3,000 people. It was the largest funeral at Arlington since the interment of John Foster Dulles, criminal brother of Alan Dulles, former Secretary of State. The past chairman of the American Veterans Committee, Mickey Levine, said at the services, quote, "No soldier in this field has fought more courageously, more heroically than Medgar Evers." On June 23, 1964, Byron De La Beckwith, a fertilizer salesman and member of the White Citizens Council and Ku Klux Klan, was arrested for Evers' murder. During the course of his first trial in 1964, De La Beckwith was visited by former Mississippi Governor Ross Barnett and one-time Army Major General Edwin A. Walker, whom you might recall was supposedly shot at by a guy named Lee Harvey Oswald. All-white juries twice that year deadlocked on De La Beckwith's guilt, and so the murder and subsequent trials caused an uproar. Bob Dylan wrote songs, Nina Simone wrote songs, and more. Jumping down a little bit, in 1994, 30 years after the two previous trials had failed to reach a verdict, Beckwith was again brought to trial based on new evidence, and Bobby DeLofter took on the job as attorney. During the trial, the body of Evers was exhumed from his grave for autopsy and found to be in a surprisingly good state of preservation as a result of embalming. Beckwith was convicted of murder on February 5, 1994, after having lived as a free man for the 3 decades following the killing. Beckwith appealed unsuccessfully and died in prison in January 2001. And so that's reading from Wikipedia, and so you can find those source notes and learn more about the assassination of Medgar Evers. And it seems like it's been going on for the last couple months, and it will happen for the next few months as we revisit many of the political assassinations of 1963 as well as 1968 and others. But moving now into the frightening present day, a couple stories showing complete corruption with our nuclear labs, basically. So first, software update brings down nuclear plant. This coming from Spectrum. The Washington Post reported in an interesting story last weekend that the Hatch nuclear power plant near Baxley, Georgia, was forced on 7th of March into an emergency shutdown for 48 hours after a company engineer installed a software update on a computer operating the plant's business network. The story in the Post says that, quote, the computer in question was used to monitor chemical and diagnostic data from one of the facility's primary control systems, and the software update was designed to synchronize data on both systems. According to a report filed with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, when the updated computer rebooted, it reset the data on the control system, causing safety systems to errantly interrupt the lack of data as a drop in water reservoirs that cool the plant's radioactive nuclear fuel rods. As a result, automated safety systems at the plant triggered a shutdown. As outlined in the story, company technicians were aware that there was a full two-way communication between some of the computers on the plant's corporate and control networks. However, the engineer who installed the update was not aware that the software was designed to synchronize data between machines on both networks, or that a reboot in the business system computer would force a similar reset in the control system machine. The company has now physically removed the connections between the control and business systems. The story notes the ongoing problem of creating secure infrastructure IT systems that were designed nearly 30 years ago without security in mind. So, as if to say, without Al-Qaeda in mind, but we mostly see that it's negligence and incompetence at the very best. So the other one is coming from the Associated Press. Worker dies at chemical weapons plant in Alabama. Officials say a worker has died at an army facility where chemical weapons are destroyed in northeastern Alabama. The laboratory worker at the Anniston Army Depot died Wednesday afternoon. The worker was employed by subcontractor Westinghouse Anniston. A company spokesman says officials are withholding details of the death out of respect for the worker's family, but the officials did say the death was not the result of chemical agents. The death was the first at the incinerator since it began operations nearly 5 years ago. The Army reports only one previous death in 18 years at chemical weapons destruction sites. In that case, a worker fell from scaffolding. And there's links in there. You can hit up WZTV to get more on the story. And you can also read more, of course, about Westinghouse and the Anniston Army Depot. And as we went over a few weeks ago, as we were having all the military drills, there's so many I can't even bring the name up, but basically the one that involved a drill at the Umatilla Chemical Weapons Depot here in Oregon. Now we're going to move into just a touch of the latest bits on 9/11 as the cover-up crumbles day by day by day. So posted up on MediaMonarchy.com under the heading 9/11 Arizona Truth Rising, Odigo, Art Students, and KSM. And there's even more put in there. I just updated it this morning and added it to the top of the post. William Pepper talking about a New York 9/11 ballot initiative. So coming from 911blogger.com, William Pepper is following the money and working with the Jersey Girls on 9/11 lawsuits. So this video is posted up in full. Let's just listen to a couple minutes of William Pepper on the 9/11 petition.
The 9/11 matter is, in my lifetime, the most traumatic assault on on democracy and the safety of this republic, because it has, as you all know, it has been responsible for an enhanced Patriots Act, the Defense Authorization Act, the Military Commissions Act, the whole range of legislation that has come out, the $385 million contract to KBR to go around the country and build facilities in every state of the union, at least two in every state of the union, for the purpose of housing illegal immigrants, so they say. I mean, how many illegal immigrants are there in Maine? How many people are coming, illegal immigrants, down from Canada these days? Things like that. No, that's not what the KBR $385 million contract is about, in my view. It is about the declaration of martial law and the incarceration of large numbers of American dissenters. That's really what they're about. So 9/11 is the trigger for all of that. And the people who try to expose what happened in 9/11, like David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones and Richard Gage and others who've done a lot of very serious work on this, are threats to that lie. But we've got to somehow aid and support the work of researchers and scholars like David by adopting tactics and strategies that may make an impact. One of those, as Ed mentioned earlier, is this attempt in New York City, the five boroughs of New York, to create a commission by referendum. The voters of the city of New York can be asked whether or not they want a new investigation, a new commission to look at 9/11.
And that clip goes on, and he details basically the uphill struggle that it would be to get a 9/11 ballot petition going in New York. However, I have a lot of confidence in him, and thank God we have people like Dr. William Pepper out in front trying to break down the wall of the cover-up of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. And I don't say this enough, and he articulated it perfectly there at the beginning. You want to end the war, you want to impeach, you want to do all these things. 9/11 is the key. It's the excuse for all of this bullshit, both here and abroad. It should also be noted that Dr. William Pepper is also now Sirhan Sirhan's new attorney. So he is burning the candle at both ends, working on multiple cover-ups. And again, I praise him, Dr. William Pepper. Look him up. And his book, actually, An Act of State, about the murder of Martin Luther King. So, moving on a little bit on our 9/11 news, I don't believe I have mentioned this at all, but a guy named Blair Gadsby went on a very long hunger strike in Arizona, teamed up with Arizona We Are Change and also new 9/11 truther, Arizona State Senator Karen Johnson, finally got a bit of a formal hearing in the Arizona State Senate. And so there are basically day-by-day accounts of Blair Gadsby's hunger strike. The idea was actually to meet with John McCain, because Karen Johnson is in Arizona, and that's where John McCain is from. And he also, of course, penned the foreword to the ridiculous Popular Mechanics Hearst Yellow Journalism whitewash debunking bullshit, debunking 9/11 myths, something like that. But let's listen to a moment of Karen Johnson speaking about Blair Gadsby and, again, the crumbling cover-up of the official conspiracy theory of 9/11.
Actually, the courage of Blair and what he is doing, putting himself out, putting his life on the line, literally, to bring attention to this issue of the need for an independent investigation. I'm in awe of Blair and what he's doing. And even though I was a little shaky and was a little scary, because many of my colleagues don't probably buy into a lot of my belief system, I still felt it was very, very important to give them each a packet with that DVD of improbable incredible collapse, along with some of the pictures that are so revealing, you know, of when the supposed collapse happened. So it was important to do this. It was needed and necessary. And we sometimes have to do things we're not comfortable with.
Thank you, Mr. President Pro Tem. Point of personal privilege, guest in the gallery. And then I'd also like to request that my remarks of more than 200 words be entered into the journal. Members, I would like to introduce a very special guest who has been joined today by several of his closest friends. Up in the gallery, we have many of the members of the 9/11 for Truth group, people who are asking for a new, independent investigation of the attacks of 9/11-2001. In particular, I would like to introduce to you a very, very courageous man named Blair Gadsby. I'm going to ask the folks with Blair to help him stand as I tell you just a little bit about him. Blair is very weak because he has been fasting for more than 2 weeks to try to bring attention to the cause of 9/11 truth. This is the 16th day that Blair has gone without food and spent his day outside the office of U.S. Senator John McCain, pleading with the senator to take a look at new evidence of the 9/11 crimes. We have one man here who is sacrificing his own personal needs and desires to stand boldly, pleading for the world to take notice, to question, to research, and not place their lives in the hands of media soundbites, to think for themselves consciously and critically. Blair is an educator, and to me, this is what great educators do. Thousands of people all over the country, and actually around the world, have been watching on the internet as this hunger strike progresses here in Phoenix. I want Blair to know that I am one of his biggest fans and that good people everywhere admire him for his courage and determination. Please give a warm welcome to Blair Gadsby and the 9/11 Truth Movement.
That's State Senator of Arizona Karen Johnson introducing Blair Gadsby on the floor of the Arizona State Senate and getting a little bit of 9/11 truth read into the record. Let's move now far away. This coming from the Mainichi Times out of Japan. School apologizes for teacher's 9/11 inside job comment. A junior high school has apologized for a teacher's comment in classes that the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks were carried out by the United States. In late May, the teacher told classes at Fujisawa Municipal Zengyo Junior High School that the synchronized terrorist attacks were, quote, written and acted out, end quote, by the United States. On Sunday, the school arranged a meeting attended by PTA officials and offered an apology. We're sorry. Whoops. We're sorry it's coming out everywhere, but... oh, God. Shifting gears, yet another documentary from Alex Jones. This one is the first installment of I don't know how many, and he's also working on a JFK film and probably an Endgame Part 2 and many, many other things over at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv. But the new one is called 9/11 Chronicles, and it's part one, Truth Rising.
How you doing tonight?
Guess who's going to jail? Guess who's going to jail?
They think he's got a bomb in his bag.
How do the American people know that 9/11 was a stage, was engineered by you, David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR, and Bilderberg Group, sir?
Answer my question.
Will you please sit down and shut up?
Yes!
Answer.
How do you sleep with me?
We love this country. We should treat our police officers, our fire department, our first responders with respect, sir. They're getting no respect from you for what you're doing to them, sir.
That's my roommate. That's his medication.
Can this side of the room, everybody stand up?
Everybody on this side, you're all rescue workers, will be dead in 4 years.
Inside job? How dare you? How dare you?
Attention Walmart shoppers, 9/11 was an inside job.
Why did Bush not even want to investigate the attack?
9/11 was an inside job. 9/11 was an inside job.
9/11
was an inside job.
Turn the camera off. No, sir.
Turn the camera off.
No, sir.
Taking my picture.
I have every right to. You're on a public sidewalk.
Now that's, of course, just the audio from an early trailer from the forthcoming 9/11 Chronicles Part 1, Truth Rising. Alex Jones's latest documentary. He's calling it cinema verite style. No voiceover or anything like that. Just contains hardcore 9/11 activism and confrontations. Of course, some of those clips we've played on the show for the last 2 years. The one I love. I don't know if you got it, is the guy commandeering the Walmart intercom and saying, "Attention, 9/11 shoppers, 9/11 was an inside job." Oh, wait, did I say 9/11 shoppers? Walmart shoppers. We should try that. Moving on, and let's get into a little bit of a flashback, and then we'll flash forward to the present day with new revelations. Flashback. Odigo says workers were warned of attack. This is coming from Haaretz, out of Israel. It's one of their major, major newspapers. Now, of course, you've probably heard the debunking, if anything, revolving around 9/11 and Israel. Of course, always says, oh, well, that's just, you know, anti-Semitic Arabic propaganda, and you got that from an Arabic website. No, no, no. We're getting this from Haaretz.com. September 26th, 2001. Odigo, the instant messenger service, says that two of its workers received messages 2 hours before the Twin Towers attack on September 11th, predicting the attack would happen, and the company has been cooperating with Israeli and American law enforcement, including the FBI, in trying to find the original sender of the message predicting the attack. Misha Makover, CEO of the company, said the two workers received the messages and immediately after the terror attack informed the company's management, which immediately contacted the Israeli security services, which brought in the FBI. I have no idea why the message was sent to these two workers, who don't know the sender. It may just have been someone who was joking and turned out they accidentally got it right, and I don't know if our information was useful in any of the arrests the FBI made. You mean the arrests of the dancing Israelis? And the Israeli art student spy ring? Oh, wait, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So that's the flashback for you. September 26, 2001, from Haaretz, Odigo says workers were warned of attacks. Now, what's brought up in, I just thought of this, in Mark Levine's movie about the protocols of the elders of Zion, they basically pull you in with the tagline of, "Did you hear that no Jews died in 9/11? We've never said that. I've never said that. It's never been the thing. You follow where the stories come from and where they go. So let's jump over to cooperativeresearch.org. Of course, the home of the fantastic 9/11 timeline from Paul Thompson, Kevin Fenton, et al. and we can read about Odigo. And so their headline, September 11, 2001, 6 a.m. Eastern Time, 2 hours before attacks, Israeli company employees receive warnings. Two employees of Odigo Incorporated, an Israeli company, received warnings of an imminent attack in New York City about 2 hours before the first plane hits the World Trade Center. Odigo, one of the world's largest instant messaging companies, has its headquarters 2 blocks from the World Trade Center. The Odigo Research and Development offices, where the warnings were received, are located in Herzliya, a suburb of Tel Aviv. That was a mouthful. Israeli security and the FBI were notified immediately after the 9/11 attacks began. The two employees claim not to know who sent the warnings, blah, blah, blah. And we can find the sources, Washington Post, Haaretz, the DPA, Courier Mail, more and more. So that's just one small bit of all the loose ends of 9/11. Now, if we flash forward to the present, a new article from Wayne Madsen, WayneMadsenReport.com. Modus operandi of pre-9/11 Israeli art student revealed. This is from June 11th. One of the over 120 Israeli art students who cased federal office buildings and military bases during a year and a half before 9/11 has revealed details of her assignment in the United States to a Wayne Madsen source. The former art student, who is now assigned to work with a non-governmental organization in South Africa on research on violent crime against South African whites by blacks, said she was first assigned to work at an Israeli-owned shopping mall kiosk in Orange County, California in early 2001 to, quote, brush up on her American English language skills, end quote. From California, the young Israeli woman was transferred to Chicago and then to Houston, where she worked in an office close to the sprawling port facility. Her cover was as an accountant for an Israeli intelligence front company involved in the shipping business. It should be noted that former CIA Southeast Region Station Chief Roland V. Carnaby, shot to death on April 28th by two Houston police officers, was known to have been concerned about the lack of security at the Port of Houston, was monitoring the activities of Israeli intelligence in the greater Houston area, and was known to have clashed with the Department of Fatherland Security over its lack of interest in providing security for the Port of Houston. After her stint in Houston, the Israeli art student was transferred to New York City for a 2-week holiday. However, she and her group were ordered by their superiors to be out of the city on September 11th. The Israeli woman was granted access to the U.S. on a student visa, and she was identified as a, quote, art student in her visa application. It was later discovered that none of the Israeli art students were, in fact, art students. Those detained as a result of a joint investigation by the Drug Enforcement Administration, the Marshals Service, and other federal law enforcement agencies were simply deported to Israel without facing a trial for wrongly stating their purpose for coming to the U.S. The Israeli art student also claimed that while working at the mall kiosks in California, she was, quote, working on other things. And again, in the story, we can hit up the links and hit up cooperativeresearch.org, and you can read more and more about the Israeli art students. January 2000, Israeli spy ring begins penetrating U.S. April 19th, 2000, reports indicate Israeli organized crime units dominate ecstasy distribution. March 23rd, 2001, DEA issues alert to look out for Israeli spies. June 2001, DEA draws up reports on Israeli spies. And there's a nice map there for you with California and Utah and Arizona and Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri and Illinois and Wisconsin and Michigan and D.C. and Kentucky and Arkansas and Georgia and Florida and Louisiana. August 23, 2001, Mossad reportedly gives CIA list of terrorists living in the U.S. At least 4 9/11 hijackers are named. December 16, 2001, Fox News removes controversial story from website, but story nonetheless makes an impact. And this, of course, is about the amazing 4-part bit from Carl Cameron. And that is still up there. And if you Google or go into Google Video or YouTube and Carl Cameron, Fox News, Israeli art student spy ring, you'll see. March 6, 2002, U.S. officials deny and media downplay existence of Israeli spy ring. March 11, 2002, suspected Israeli students reportedly served in military. March 15, 2002, Jewish magazine says Israeli spied in U.S. on radical Muslims. May 7th, 02, sloppy Israeli spy ring could have been smoke screen. This coming from Salon and Haaretz. September 16, 2004, Israelis arrested on 9/11 sue the U.S., claiming mistreatment and torture. And they even go on Israeli TV and go, meh, what? We were just there to observe. And did they? Moving further into all our latest 9/11 news, interestingly enough, the Financial Times, FT.com, one of the papers to look at. It's how the elite communicate with each other. FT.com. Two articles by the same guy. One is called The Truth Is Out There, and the other is called What Happened to Building 7. And so a little bit from each. The truth is out there. Last winter, Investigate 9/11 banners seemed to be popping up all over the place. Bill Clinton was heckled by truthers in Denver while campaigning for his wife. And it goes on to mention Marion Cotillard and Thierry Meyssan's appalling fraud or 9/11 the big lie and all that. But we also have a retort and a response to Peter Barber's The Truth Is Out There. It's up on globalresearch.ca, where they say, I'm a professional medical librarian who delivered best evidence literature to the public health officers of the British Columbia government for 25 years. Your article, The Truth Is Out There, is an ad hominem approach to a critically serious matter, and it unfortunately fails to deal with the evidence involved. The other article, What Happened to Building 7? To the truthers, Building 7, the third building in the World Trade Center complex to collapse on 9/11, is evidence that the mainstream media is in on the plot. And they say, because, of course, the BBC reported 20 minutes early about Building 7 falling, that we think that the media is in on it. No, we've never said that. I've never said that. We want to know who the fuck told you it fell. Of course, BBC, Jane Stanley, they announced it about 20 minutes early. Aaron Brown on over on CNN was even a half hour or more ahead. Aaron Brown, being a New Yorker, was standing downtown, and he, of course, knew full fucking well that Building 7 was still standing there, because he looks over his shoulder and says, I've heard the Solomon Brothers building has collapsed, or is collapsing. The building is huge. It was huge. It was 47 stories. In most cities, it would be the biggest building around. But I digress. And let's move on to more ballsy activism. This from Mark Dice, or John Connor, of the Resistance Manifesto. Now, regardless of some of his more fundamentalist Christian bizarro connections, he does good work. And I think he kind of pioneered the idea that Luke Radowski and We Are Change took on, and that was basically confronting important people and getting them gotcha on camera. Now he's got something even more ballsy up his sleeve, so let's listen to, of course, Fox News and Mark Dice.
Imagine that you are a soldier stationed in Iraq. Mail call comes around and you've got a letter from back home. But it is not from your family or your friends. It is a letter telling you that you are a pawn in the service of the, quote, New World Order. And that you are risking your life for a government that helped carry out the 9/11 attacks. This is not a joke. This is actually happening. These letters are the work of Mark Dice, the founder of a group called The Resistance. Mark joins us live now, along with Captain Pete Hegseth. Pete is a National Guardsman who served in Iraq, and he is the Executive Director of Vets for Freedom. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Mark, let me start with you. Do you think this is helpful to our troops serving on the ground in Iraq?
I think that it's very beneficial that we inform them as to the true circumstances that got them in the situation
they're in.
I think that if they're able to make better decisions based on the facts, that they can decide to direct their lives and their careers and the positions and the direction that they want to go. I think feeding them a constant stream of propaganda is one of the most detrimental things to them and to our service.
What do you want them to do? Abandon the war to just walk off the battlefield?
Them to join the 9/11 truth movement. We want them to ask their superiors hard and compelling questions about the circumstances of 9/11.
Is that the role of an American soldier?
Well, we want them to get the leadership to start thinking about what it is that they're sending these troops into. Look, everybody knows that the troops are so angry that they've been put in that position based on lies. Ron Paul had the largest donations from the troops themselves. The troops know, I personally know United States the truth? I don't even want to dignify this with a response.
And I'm not going to let you beat. But that whole clip is up, and you can watch the entire thing where they repeatedly cut off Mark Dice. But yes, we do want soldiers to lay down their arms. As I shouted yes to her question. Let's move on for our last couple bits of the latest 9/11 news. 9/11 mastermind, protector of national security secrets. This from the Deutsche Press Agency, DPA. The United States is asking Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, KSM, to safeguard some of its national security secrets. That's part of the rules Mohammed must follow after being granted the right to represent himself before the military tribunal that could hand him the death penalty. It was also one of the more bizarre twists, as Mohammed and four other co-defendants appeared Thursday for the beginning of their tribunal and for the first time in public after years of secret, torturous confinement. Now, I don't have a lot of the updates and some of the latest Supreme Court rulings on detentions and Gitmo and all of that, but it will be forthcoming. I guess I just wonder, who's the mastermind of 9/11? I said it was Bin Laden, and then he's not that important, and of course, 9/11 isn't mentioned on his FBI Most Wanted poster because, according to FBI agent Rex Toom, they have, quote, no hard evidence. And if you guys do have evidence, let's fucking see it. That's the thing. If they actually had the evidence, if they actually had the proof of the plane crashing in Shanksville, if they actually had the proof of the plane crashing into the Pentagon, we'd never see the end of it. Moving quickly to an editorial and a longer piece that you can download in its entirety from the one and only Peter Dale Scott. He has a new essay called 9/11, Deep State Violence and the Hope of Internet Politics. And so, just the first little bit. The unthinkable, that elements inside the state would conspire with criminals to kill innocent civilians, has become not only thinkable, but commonplace in the last century. A seminal example was in French Algeria, where dissident elements of the French armed forces resisting General de Gaulle's plans for Algerian independence organized as the secret army organization and bombed civilians indiscriminately with targets including hospitals and schools. Critics like Alexander Litvinenko, who was subsequently murdered in London in November 2006, have charged that the 1999 bombings of apartment buildings around Moscow attributed to Chechen separatists were in fact the work of the Russian Secret Service, FSB. And so it's a lengthy essay, but it's all about deep politics, deep state violence, and more. Our last bit of latest 9/11 news. Canadian MP reads 9/11 petition in Parliament.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to rise in the House today to present three petitions. The first petition is signed by approximately 500 people across Canada, and it draws the attention to the House of the following, that scientific and eyewitness evidence shows that the 9/11 Commission report is a fraudulent document, and that elements within the U.S. government were complicit in the murder of thousands of people on 9/11/2001. This event, the petition points out, brought Canada into the so-called war on terror that has changed the domestic and foreign policies for the worse and that will have negative consequences for Canada. And Mr. Speaker, that's signed by about 500 people all across the country.
So there you go. That was new Democratic Party Deputy House Leader Libby Davies delivering a parliamentary petition signed by over 500 Canadians demanding a new 9/11 investigation in Canada's House of Commons during routine proceedings. I believe after that she goes on to read another parliamentary petition that I believe has to do with Codex Alimentarius. We're now into hour number two of this Friday the 13th. June 2008, episode 79 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning starting at 10 Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time on the worldwide home of free speech, revereradionetwork.com. And you can, of course, hit up MySpace and Dig and YouTube and Yahoo and iTunes and radioforall.net and archive.org for all the contact to Media Monarchy. So let's move forward, my friends, now to my man, Alex Ansari. Of course, if you didn't know, back on episode 75, had Alex here in the studio for the full 2 hours on episode 75. That one still gets a lot of downloads. You should definitely check it out. We had a good time. We went over everything, just about. But some of the latest from Alex Ansari and Outside the Box. We have the latest episode of his show on We the People Radio Network, WTPRN.com, that he does on Wednesdays and also Saturdays. He also posted up a video yesterday called Insights at the Park, where Alex records his thoughts as he sits outside somewhere in the Portland area. And we also have Outside the Box episode 156, which originally ran June 5th on Portland Community Media. And I post his episodes up every week for you. So let's listen to a bit from Insights from the Park and then also from Outside the Box 156 and get two different sides of Alex Ansari.
Try to spend more time outside, away from what I perceive to be a prison. Sometimes I feel like our very energy is being sucked from us. And we have to reconnect to something that's real so that we can fully stay alive, be strong physically, spiritually, psychologically. What is sucking our energy from our bodies, from our minds, from our spirits? What is the solution? I get tired of hearing the same old thing over and over and over again about how it's about looking for something outside of yourself. Reading the right book, being lucky enough to be one of those chosen few to be able to read the right book and be saved from total damnation. In my life, what I've learned is that it, life itself, is about discovering who you are, what you're supposed to be doing outside of the book. Outside of the standardized box that this culture provides us with. When we're born, when we enter this world, pure, like nature, like the trees, like the ducks in the pond over there, like the squirrels that live in these trees, which are the lungs of the earth. When we come into this world pure, sane, we learn to become insane, indoctrinated into this culture, this AmeriCult. I think about all the different walls of separation that surround me. And I think I really could write a book. And it gets to be too much when your awareness of it increases. It can sometimes get to be too much. So again, I come here. I come somewhere else. I go somewhere else.
I am seeing this stuff in the future. Don't you get that? How are we prepared now to deal with what's to come? There's something larger taking place. And I'm doing this out of love. And I will continue, no matter what email you send me about calming down. Let's just do a show about meditation and oming all night. All that stuff I support. But I'm one of a very few amount of people. I'm not aware of who the others are. I'm just giving credit to people I don't know that are talking about these things in a city of 500,000 people. God damn it! 500,000 people live in the city. Why aren't there more people like me? Why aren't there more women like me screaming about what the UN peacekeepers are doing? People are shutting down. They've got them locked in. My friends are locked in. People I thought were my friends are locked in. They're locked into this reality. not the overall arching reality. People want to connect with the Gaia spirit of the planet and just feel the good vibes and play the Bee Gees and play the Bee Gees, the Beatles, Pink Floyd, Smashing Pumpkins, whatever gets you off at the moment vibrationally, just to feel good. Now, I support that. But when I talk to these people, I went to a guy who was teaching people how to chant, and I participate in that. I'm open to things like that. I'm frustrated because I bring my truth and say something big is about to take place. We have to unify. And I try to bring different people on. Well, who are you? What do you talk about? Give me your website. And they'll look and just be no response. It's like the very fact that I'm speaking is a total abomination to them. It's demonic. It's evil. It's wrong. It's total insanity. I was born to do this. Some of you were born to do great things. Jesus said, whatever you think about Jesus, I can do many things, but you can do more. There's a reason he and others have said this, but our culture is very, very, very specific into what prophet they look towards. Because they remodel the prophet, they remodel the religion, and they began to rewrite the mind, associations. This is God. This is the discussion. This is the issue. Who would Jesus kill? Who would Jesus protect? What weapons would Jesus use? Perhaps the high-tech harp weapons. The rods from gods. I'm feeling sick now. I'm not the only one. I'm feeling literally sick to my stomach. With no one to hold or no one to really connect with, all I can do is rock myself back and forth and pray that some of you really will take what I'm saying seriously, because I'm going to see you on the streets. I'm not leaving Portland. There are people that have left the city. I have nowhere to go. I can barely afford rent. I can't leave this city, and I'm not ready to leave this show. I don't want to leave this show.
Telling it like it is. That's my man, Alex Ansari. That was from his two latest videos, Insights from the Park first, and the more aggro version on episode 156 of Outside the Box. I send out my thanks and prayers to Alex. I know he's going through his own private shit, so send him your love as well. Now, as if to lighten the mood slightly, just a little bit. It'll get a lot uglier in a minute. Let's talk about the elitist menace among us.
All right, folks, I am pumped up for the presidential election in November, but recently polls have Senator Obama slightly ahead of John McCain. However, there's still a major obstacle standing in his way. He thinks he's so smart. David Brooks sums up Obama's situation perfectly.
Obama's problem is he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who could go into an Applebee's salad bar and people think he fits in naturally there.
Exactly. I could never picture Senator Obama at an Applebee's salad bar. And not just because Applebee's doesn't have a salad bar. Let's face it. Obama just isn't an average Joe like me and David Brooks. He probably eats at Chili's. What a snob. And there is a word for people like Barack Obama, and in this election, you're hearing it everywhere.
I think those comments are elitist.
Elite opinion.
Elite candidate.
He's an elitist.
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 Gucci wearing, latte drinking.
McGovern egghead, latte liberal.
You guys drink your lattes and your white wines.
Elite, effete snobs.
Elitist. Elitist remarks.
Elitist, out of touch and frankly patronizing.
Nothing stings like being called an elitist by the humble working class members of the media and politics. Some of those people have to do their own hair. And folks, it's not just Barack Obama. These elitists have been with us for years. In fact, I recently dug up an educational film I saw back in grade school that really opened my eyes. And I hope it opens yours.
The Prescott Group presents The Elitist Menace Among Us. Has your teacher ever tried to tell you something you don't need to know? Like where to find Europe on a map? What comes after the number 9? Or how to escape a burning building? Then your teacher is an elitist. Yes, an elitist. An ist worse than communist, feminist, and harpist combined. To put it simply, elitists are evil, lying, Ivy League, tea-drinking, impotent, sex fiends who are godless. Remember, only an elitist would spell elitist correctly. What do these elitists want? They want our brains. To put in our brains the belief that books are for reading, instead of for tenderizing meat. Elitists like astrophysicists and dentists think that just because they have fancy degrees and years of experience, they know more than you. They don't. And when an elitist is elected to public office, they push through their pro-elitist agenda, like monocles for babies. If we're going to stop these elitists, first we have to identify them. Here's how. Look for someone using a napkin, a fork and knife, refusing to swallow an olive pit, or sipping drinks with foreign names like cappuccinos or Filipinos. Once you've identified an elitist, it's time to delete them. First, get them drunk and take them hunting. With any luck, they'll shoot themselves. So the next time you see someone reading a book or drinking a Filipino, remember, they're probably an elitist. My, she does look refreshing. Wait, does that make me an elitist? After all, I do know a lot about them. Oh no, what have I become? What have I become?
Well, it has a happy ending. We'll be right back.
There you go. A little more satire for you. We had The Onion, and now we have The Colbert Report talking about elitists. And fortunately, he does point out, of course, that you have a bunch of elites talking about elitists. And again, they're not talking about the issues. They're talking about how we talk about the issues. Shifting gears, we had, I think, a whole lot of success exposing and blowing the lid off of the Bilderberg Group. Last week, the secretive globalist influential gathering happened to gather in Chantilly, Virginia, which, of course, we went over it last year. There were, over the course of the several days, hundreds of people showed up to protest. We basically forced their hand into them having... They had to release a press release, which they have never done before in their 50-plus years of secretly meeting together. So they put out a little whitewash. And they even released, of course, there for public consumption, the attendees list, which usually investigative journalists Jim Tucker and others have gotten it out year after year after year. So there wasn't, of course, a whole lot of mainstream media coverage, of course, because people like Donald Graham of the Washington Post was there. And, of course, the Grahams and the Washington Post empire have never missed a Bilderberg. So the media is fully in bed with the Bilderberg Group. But we did have places like the Epoch Times, Raw Story, Wonkette, and other places covering the Bilderberg story. I think ultimately it was quite the success. I'm not sure why they decided to bring it back to the States so soon. They usually bounce around the country, or around the globe, rather. But, of course, we went over last week as it was breaking that, of course, Hillary and Obama snuck away when they just happened to be, a couple dozen miles away from the Bilderberg meeting. And that was, of course, when, you know, Barack Obama kidnapped the press corps and sent them on a plane away to Chicago while he and Hillary snuck away to, was it Feinstein's house, was it Clinton's house, or was it another private meeting with the Bilderberg Group? As we know, they're, of course, the kingmakers for who will perhaps become the VP. And we're going to get into that. But first, let's touch on the Epoch Times. They interviewed Alex Jones, at the protest outside the Bilderberg meeting. While over 100 of the most influential people in the world are believed to gather at the Westfields Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, Virginia for several days, June 5th through the 8th, all the major media, except for the Epoch Times, are apparently silent about it. The event is an annual gathering of the Bilderberg Group. Alex Jones, syndicated radio talk show host and documentary filmmaker, says that he invited the Washington Post, the Fairfax Times, and asked 16 million listeners of the Coast to Coast AM radio show to call on the press to cover the event, but no major media showed. This is a criminal group. They're involved in very bad things, said Alex Jones, referring to the Bilderberg Group. And that whole story is up on Epoch Times. Now, we also know that Obama's office won't deny that he attended the Bilderberg meeting. And I don't have this latest update, but the Washington Post mentioned Obama's handler is Bilderberg. Of course, as we've gone over the last couple weeks, they, of course, first tapped James A. Johnson, former Fannie Mae CEO and consummate Washington insider, to be leading Senator Barack O. Bilderberg's vice presidential search process. He just conducted an early round of interviews on Capitol Hill, but Johnson also is proving a ripe target for blah-blah-blah. If you jump down in the Washington Post article, they say he chaired the Kennedy Center for the Arts and is a member of exclusive clubs such as American Friends of Bilderberg, the Trilateral Commission, and the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, again, because of the relatively massive exposure we've given to the Bilderberg Group, old Jimmy Johnson stepped aside because the heat got too hot for him, and of course, all his shady financial connections that come to light. If we hit up one from the Raw Story, they ran a little bit about the Bilderberg Group. Bilderberg attracts prominent politicians and businessmen. The 56th Bilderberg meeting, an annual conference of influential politicians and businessmen, met in Chantilly, Virginia, according to a press release with a link for you. Now, let's back up a little bit. Let's give you a little bit about James A. Johnson. United States Democratic Party political figure. He was the campaign manager for Walter Mondale's failed 84 presidential bid and chaired the vice presidential selection process for the presidential campaign of John Kerry, which, of course, we know documented John Edwards went to the Bilderberg meeting and so impressed them with the speech that he gave, they put him on the Kerry ticket. And they, of course, took the dive like any good staged boxing match. In the 2008 election, he was a member of the vice presidential selection process for the presumptive Democratic nominee, Senator Barack Obama. So this is the Wikipedia page. They do have the update because I just hit the link on May 22nd, or rather, let's jump down. Although he was not accused of any wrongdoing and was initially defended by Obama on the grounds that he was simply an unpaid volunteer, Johnson decided to step down from the vice presidential vetting position on June 11th in order to avoid being a distraction to Obama's campaign, which of course has its plate full with enough distractions to keep them busy. If we hit up blacklistednews.com, my man Doug Owen has posted up the full Bilderberg participant list, and he has emboldened and embiggened a few important notable figures like Helicopter Ben Bernanke, Chairman, Board of Governors, the Criminal, Illegal, Federal Reserve System. We also have Donald E. Graham, Chairman and CEO of the Washington Post Company. James A. Johnson, Vice Chairman, Perseus. We also have Heinz Kissinger, Chairman of Kissinger Associates and worldwide wanted war criminal. We also have Richard N. Pearl, Resident Fellow of American Enterprise Institute. Condoleezza Rice, Secretary of State. David Rockefeller, former Chairman of the Chase Manhattan Bank. Mark Sanford, Governor of South Carolina. And Paul Wolfowitz, visiting scholar, American Enterprise Institute. Now, a couple of the names, and there have been several, floated about being Obama's VP. And, of course, we talked about if he takes Hillary on. I believe it's curtains, but that's just me. That's not just me. But they've been floating some of the names. I can't pull her name out, but she's the governor of Kansas, and she's been touted as being a possible VP for Obama, and she was she was at Bilderberg. Tom Daschle from South Dakota the state that Obama couldn't win, in addition to all the others he couldn't win, which of course point to the difficult task he has ahead of him in November. Tom Daschle. Of course, he received some anthrax in the mail for giving some, you know, angry lip service about opposing the Patriot Act. He was, of course, you know, promptly mailed some anthrax, which of course traced back to Fort Detrick in Maryland. It was the Ames strain. It was Philip Zach. So we'll see who they pick. It's a psyop. It's a dog and pony show. It's the greatest show on earth. It's the presidential selection 2008. One last bit here about Bilderberg as we realize the fallout, because they basically meet and they decide the script for the next year for the most part. So if we jump to my man Lee Rogers, roguegovernment.com, Bilderberg seeks bank centralization agenda. Fresh off the 2008 Bilderberg meeting, it looks as if New York Federal Reserve President Timothy Geithner, G-E-I-T-H-N-E-R, Geithner, is set to push a new agenda in the world of central banking that was likely decided upon at Bilderberg. Geithner yesterday wrote an article in the Financial Times calling for a global regulatory banking framework. That'll make everything better. Moving forward to one of the more important stories of the last week. And of course, we mentioned the phony Democrats that were voted in 2006 have done nothing, and they continue to do nothing to this day. They fund the war. They roll over on all the important legislation. They are Vichy, traitorous Democrats, but they are just one side of the corrupt coin. And when are you going to realize the phony, false, left-right paradigm? Our man, Dennis Kucinich, an Ohio Democratic lawmaker and former presidential candidate, has presented articles of impeachment against President George Walker Bush. 35 articles were presented by Kucinich to the House of Representatives late Monday evening, airing live on C-SPAN. Raw Story has more details, and also 911blogger.com also helpfully pointed out Article 33, appropriately enough, repeatedly ignored and failed to respond to high-level intelligence warnings of planned terrorist attacks in the U.S. prior to 9/11. Kucinich's full presentation is available, and we'll get into, of course, the way the media killed the story of impeachment, and of course how his website was immediately hacked and brought down. Let's listen to a few minutes of Dennis Kucinich on the hope of the impeachment of the criminal regime of George W. Bush.
Will the House come to order? The gentleman from Ohio.
Wait a minute. I'm going to go forward.
Recognized.
Madam Speaker, pursuant to Clause 2 of Rule 9, I rise to give notice of my intent to raise a question of the privileges of the House. The form of the resolution is as follows. The House is not in order.
Please proceed.
The form of the resolution is as follows. A resolution, articles of impeachment of George Bush, President of the United States. Resolved that President George W. Bush be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and that the following articles of impeachment be exhibited to the United States Senate. Articles of impeachment exhibited by the House of Representatives of the United States of America in the name of itself and of the people of the United States of America, in maintenance and support of its impeachment against President George W. Bush for high crimes and misdemeanors. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and to the best of his ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of its constitutional duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has committed the following abuses of power. Article 1, creating a secret propaganda campaign to manufacture a false case for war against Iraq. In his conduct while President of the United States, George W. Bush, in violation of his constitutional oath to faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and to the best of his ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and in violation of its constitutional duty under Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution to take care that the laws be faithfully executed, has both personally and acting through his agents and subordinates, together with the Vice President, illegally spent public dollars on a secret propaganda campaign to manufacture a false cause for war against Iraq. The Department of Defense has engaged in a years-long secret domestic propaganda campaign to promote the...
Gentlemen will suspend. The House will come to order. Please proceed.
The Department of Defense has engaged in a years-long secret domestic propaganda campaign to promote the invasion and the occupation of Iraq. The secret program was defended by the White House press secretary following its exposure. This program follows the pattern of crimes detailed in Articles 1, 2, 4, and 7. Strike that, 8. The mission of this program placed it within the field controlled by the White House Iraq Group, known as WIG, a White House task force formed in August 2002 to market an invasion of Iraq to the American people. The group included Karl Rove, I. Lewis Libby, Condoleezza Rice, Karen Hughes, Mary Matlin, Stephen Hadley, Nicholas E. Callio, and James R. Wilkinson. The White House Iraq Group, or WIG, produced white papers detailing so-called intelligence of Iraq's nuclear threat that later proved to be false. This supposed intelligence included the claim that Iraq had sought uranium from Niger, as well as the claim that the high-strength uranium tubes Iraq purchased from China were to be used for the sole purpose of building centrifuges to enrich uranium. Unlike the National Intelligence Estimate of 2002, the WIG's white paper provided, quote, gripping images and stories, unquote, and used, quote, literary license, unquote, with intelligence. The White House Iraq Group's white papers were written at the same time and by the same people as speeches and talking points prepared for President Bush and some of his top officials. All of these actions by the president and his agents and subordinates exhibit a disregard for the truth and a recklessness with regard to national security, nuclear proliferation, and the global role of the United States military that is not merely unacceptable, but is dangerous in a commander-in-chief. In all these actions and decisions, President George W. Bush has acted in a manner contrary to his trust as president and commander-in-chief, and subversive of constitutional government, to the prejudice and the cause of law and justice, and to the manifest injury of the people of the United States. Wherefore, President George Bush, by such conduct, is guilty of an impeachable offense warranting removal from office.
We will continue to fight for impeachment until January 20th, 2009, which then we will only shift into fighting for war crimes and prosecutions and high crimes and misdemeanors. So, again, thank God people like Dennis Kucinich are out there doing it. And again, as we noted, Article 33 related to 9/11, I will reiterate that how did they get the mandate and the political capital to even get to the point where they could lie about starting the war that they wanted to start? It all comes back to 9/11. And it's all going to come out. It's all going to come out. It's only a matter of who will be crushed when it all comes crumbling down. So, this last Tuesday was the 45th anniversary of a speech given by a man crushed by the fallout. John F. Kennedy, on June 10th, 1963, declared that the U.S. would be willing to cease testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere if the Soviet Union agreed to follow suit. In a commencement address at Washington's American University, the president disavowed a Pax Americana modeled after the Roman Empire. He said instead his administration was seeking to fashion a new strategy for peace.
I have therefore chosen this time and place to discuss a topic on which ignorance too often abounds and the truth too rarely perceived, and that is the most important topic on earth, peace. What kind of a peace do I mean, and what kind of a peace do we seek? Not a Pax Americana enforced on the world by American weapons of war. Not the peace of the grave or the security of the slave. I am talking about genuine peace, the kind of peace that makes life on earth worth living, the kind that enables men and nations to grow and to hope and build a better life for their children. Not merely peace for Americans, but peace for all men and women. Not merely peace in our time, but peace in all time. I speak of peace because of the new face of war. Total war makes no sense in an age where great powers can maintain large and relatively invulnerable nuclear forces and refuse to surrender without resort to those forces. It makes no sense in an age where a single nuclear weapon contains almost 10 times the explosive force delivered by all the Allied air forces in the Second World War. It makes no sense in an age when the deadly poisons produced by a nuclear exchange would be carried by wind and water and soil and seed to the far corners of the globe and to generations yet unborn. Today, the expenditure of billions of dollars every year on weapons acquired for the purpose of making sure we never need them is essential to the keeping of peace. But surely the acquisition of such idle stockpiles, which can only destroy and never create, is not the only, much less the most efficient, means of assuring peace. I speak of peace, therefore, as the necessary rational end of rational men. I realize the pursuit of peace is not as dramatic as the pursuit of war, and frequently the words of the pursuers fall on deaf ears, but we have no more urgent task.
We have no more urgent task. And so that was just a little bit of JFK's legendary speech, June 10th, 1963, at American University. And that segues into our next story. JFK and the Unspeakable author, James W. Douglas, was in Portland Monday night. Jim Douglas was speaking at the Pals on Hawthorne. And I went, checked it out, I recorded it, and I uploaded it, and I believe it's had well over 100 downloads now in just a couple days. So I'm not going to play a clip from James W. Douglas's talk at the Portland Pals on Hawthorne in his new book, JFK and the Unspeakable. It was interesting. When I got there, it was right in time, and I basically found, you know, the Pals worker that was running the show and asked him, is it okay if I record? And he was like, you have to ask the author. So I ran over and asked Jim, hey, man, is it okay if I record? And he said, yeah, sure. What's your name? I said, my name's Jim, too. And I told him that I've been listening to him on blackopradio.com, where Len Osanek and his fantastic show has been interviewing Jim Douglas every other week, basically going chapter by chapter in the new book, JFK and the Unspeakable. And so he gave a 45-minute talk, and that's what I've posted up for you. So you should definitely check it out. It's embedded in the story, JFK and the Unspeakable Author Speaks in Portland, up on MediaMonarchy.com. And he did a little Q&A afterwards. And, of course, the first question was, oh, God, well, what's going to happen when our current leading candidate gets into the crosshairs? And I kind of had to roll my eyes and I bit my tongue. But when I talked to Jim after the talk, I said straight up, I don't think Obama is a threat to the system. Jim's reply was he doesn't believe that he's a threat either. However, he could find himself in a situation like JFK, who was, of course, no saint and was an old cold warrior. But once he found himself barricaded in by the criminal CIA and his psychopathic joint chiefs of staff, and he was going to pull our advisors out of Vietnam with National Security Action Memorandum 263, which, of course, LBJ overturned the week after JFK's death with NSAM 273, and it was off to the races. Of course, we needed the false flag Gulf of Tonkin event to get us there, but that, of course, is another story. Powell's blurb about JFK and the Unspeakable. In JFK and the Unspeakable, an astonishing new examination of the Kennedy assassination and its meaning today for the struggle for peace, James W. Douglas lays out the journey that led JFK in the course of 3 years from his position as a traditional Cold Warrior to his determination to break with the logic of the Cold War and lead the world in an entirely different direction. There's another bit from the Birmingham News, AL.com. JFK assassination, a religious conspiracy, author says. Catholic peace activist Jim Douglas of Birmingham believes in conspiracy theories, including the big daddy of them all, the conspiracy to kill JFK. There's no mystery as to how and why and by whom he was assassinated, Douglas said. And he's not referring to Lee Harvey Oswald, who he believes was framed as the assassin by the CIA. Kennedy's enemies were covert operatives in his own government, Douglas alleges. He was killed by a high-level national security state organized by the CIA. He was not carrying out what his national security state wanted. Of course, he rejected Operation Northwoods, the secret plan to carry out false flag attacks and blame them on Cuba. So there's an hour-long interview with Jim Douglas, and there's a link over to blackopradio.com, and you can listen to some of the great interviews with Jim Douglas, as well as some of the other great assassination researchers like Jim DiEugenio and Lisa Peace and Pat Valentino and on and on and on. So hat tip to Lynn over at blackopradio.com. Hurrying quickly now, in our last batch of news, it's all going to be about gas and peak oil and doomsday, my friends. So, first, gas hit a national average of $4 for the first time this last Sunday. From the Associated Press, drivers are paying an average of $4 a gallon for gasoline for the first time. AAA and the Oil Price Information Service, with links to both for you, say the national average price for a gallon of regular gas rose to 4.005 overnight from 3.988. But consumers in many parts of the country have already been paying well above that price for some time. Now, before we play the clip that looks at this crisis through the Malaysian lens, it should be noted, of course, that high gas is brought on by the low dollar. Our dollar is collapsing. That's why prices are going up. Here's the AP report, CNN Money, Malaysia Gas.
Pain at the pumps in Malaysia. If you think gas is going up dramatically where you live, listen to this. Prices jumped here 41% overnight. On Thursday, the government abolished heavy fuel subsidies amid high world oil prices. Consumers were left reeling.
Surprising. Shocking, actually.
See, I use oil every day. Now everything is getting expensive. So a lot of money I have to spend for the oil consumption.
Before, people were paying 61 cents a litre or $2 $3.34 a gallon for regular gasoline. Now it's up to 87 cents a litre, $3.30 a gallon. A big jump in a country where wages are low and food prices are rising.
Filling up in Malaysia has been far cheaper than any other neighbouring country in Southeast Asia. But suddenly, overnight, people have been exposed to the real price of oil, and they don't like it one bit.
Malaysia, we have the oil, we have the source, but then we have to, at the same time, we have to pay for a very high price. So it's too much for the people.
Malaysia is an oil-producing nation. The opposition says people should benefit from cheap gas.
If we are selling oil at a high price and having good profits, then why is it that we are going to suffer like every other country in the world that doesn't have oil?
But the government says it was spending $14 billion a year subsidizing fuel, shielding customers from energy price spikes. Now the government has decided it's time that ended. They say this is a green measure. Owners of small energy-efficient cars will get about $200 a year back from the government.
Well, of course it's shock therapy, but at the same time, there is a sweetener. And therefore, our focus is really on getting subsidies more targeted and more better delivered to the poor. And I think that's why I prefer subsidy for food, more subsidy for food rather than just for petrol.
But the opposition is furious and has called for protests.
Okay, we've been told many times to change our lifestyle because of the increase in the price of oil. We have been changing our lifestyle every increase that has come over the last how many years? Why don't they change their style of governing?
The government isn't backing down. Fuel is up dramatically here. Depending on your view, it's either political suicide for an already beleaguered government or courageous economics. Either way, the price of gas is now suddenly a hot topic after years of people taking cheap gas for granted. Dan Rivers, CNN, Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
Ivar Lofing is convinced the world is running out of oil. He spent the last 10 years getting ready for that day. A mainstream survivalist chopping his own wood, installing solar panels, growing vegetables, even driving a solar-powered car. All of it geared to becoming self-sufficient.
Call me crazy, but I'm crazy like a fox. This household makes half of its own energy. I mean, you know, two-thirds of the hot water, half the heat right there, a small part of the electricity, half the gasoline.
Lofting is a high school teacher who lives in Skowhegan, Maine, roughly 2 hours north of Portland. He believes a world driven by cheap oil is coming to an end.
How does peak oil play into the changes you're making in your life?
Well, peak oil has everything to do with it.
Peak oil is the point when global oil production peaks, then goes down. The remaining oil supply is limited and will be harder to get at. And that means fewer barrels a day. Some oil experts say that day is here. Others predict it's 20 to 30 years away. But as gas prices rise, websites like peakoil.com and Survival Blog are getting more and more visitors, talking about the end of cheap oil and the possible threat of political and economic instability around the world.
That's 4,000 gallons a year.
And peak oil groups like Lofting's have seen a spike in members.
I think that things can have the potential to get very, very bad if we don't do anything. However, I really do.
Unlike some survivalists, Lofting has not started raising chickens or stockpiling a year's worth of food and ammunition. But he is thinking of a bigger garden and maybe a small boat, just in case. Deborah Fairick, CNN, Skowhegan, Maine.
We're going to need a bigger boat. And that full video is up from CNN and Raw Story. Lastly, my friends, I did not cover this story last Friday, and thank God it didn't happen, because boy, would my face have been red if I didn't tell you about this ahead of time and it happened, but a doomsday cult said that nuclear war was supposed to start yesterday.
This is the story of how a former policeman and trailer park manager in Abilene, Texas, has built his own religion, persuading thousands around the world to follow him because the end of the world, he says, is coming.
May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you.
73-year-old Yisrael Hawkins, also known as Buffalo Bill, is the overseer, or as some call him, the king of the House of Yahweh, a homemade mix of Jewish and Christian beliefs, where he predicts only his followers will avoid the coming doomsday.
No one else has right to the tree of life except those who keep the laws of Yahweh.
Located outside Abilene, Texas, on a huge tract of land with watchtowers and well-guarded gates, Buffalo Bill Yisrael Hawkins has built a devoted following. Some believe its members are in danger.
I don't think there's any way to describe it but to say it's a religious cult.
Outsiders are not allowed, but we were given an escorted tour and introduced to some of his followers.
He's a great man.
He's the great teacher.
I love the man.
I would place him next to Yahshua Messiah, the Savior.
They are so loyal that almost all of them have legally changed their names to his, Hawkins.
Are you all essentially named Hawkins? Everyone's named Hawkins.
But Hawkins denies he has any cult-like control over his followers.
I merely teach the laws to them, and I beg them to follow those laws so they'll be a part of Yahweh's kingdom.
And to be part of Yahweh's kingdom means to be safe from doomsday. He preaches that when the world comes to an end, only those in the house of Yahweh will survive. And nuclear war, he told ABC News, is now scheduled to begin next Thursday, June 12th, or maybe even sooner.
Oh, yes.
June 12th.
But it could be turned loose before then. I don't expect it to be turned loose before then.
When do you expect it to be turned loose?
By June 12th.
Pray for me that he...
As wacky as it may seem, his followers believe him.
So he'll get...
There are now hundreds of truck trailers on the House of Yahweh compound, loaded with food and supplies, ready for next week's nuclear war. Unfortunately for the self-proclaimed prophet Hawkins, he has twice before predicted nuclear war in 2000 and 2006, and that didn't work out. And that's not the only problem Hawkins faces. He's also charged twice with felony bigamy counts in Texas, where authorities say he may have as many as 30 wives. He denies the charge, saying the local prosecutor just doesn't like his brand of religion, Chris.
Brian, thank you for bringing this story. A wild one.
A wild one indeed. And that's going to be our last one. Doomsday cult predicted nuclear war would start yesterday. But, hell, the sun will come out tomorrow. It could happen. That's going to do it for episode 79 of MediaMonarchy.com. June 13th, Friday the 13th, 2008. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you every week from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. Please get the podcasts and share them and tell a neighbor. iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. So just a couple last things. Let's look for a moment at just a few of the interesting and creepy visitors in the last week to MediaMonarchy.com. If you're new to this, I cast an eye once a day over to Stat Counter that runs my little hit counter at the bottom of the page. It'll tell you who's visiting your page and how, and what maybe they Googled to end up at your page, or how they got there. So it's always quite interesting, and I keep a little log, and for the last few weeks I've even been including them in the show notes that you can hit up on Archive or RadioForAll.net on the individual show postings. So, let's look at what we got. Amdocs Canada Managed Services. They Googled Anderson Cooper NWO. And, of course, Anderson Cooper, heir to the Vanderbilt fortune. Scroll and Key, Book and Snake, Yale Connected, Channel 1. The Smithsonian Institution Googled Target Safe Baby Bottles. And, of course, they don't have safe baby bottles. They've got all the BPA your baby can handle. Office Depot Googled nuclear war. The Sacramento Regional Office of Homeland Security Googled Milton Neneman. Now, why would they Google Milton Neneman? Well, we went over him last week, and he wrote a master's thesis about the fusion centers that have popped up all over the country in the wake of Fatherland Security and 9/11. and the 9/11 Reichstag event. He's done a scholarly report that the fusion centers face insufficient terrorist activity. So, of course, you get thousands of people looking for terror everywhere. They're going to find it. Ohio State University, Google, JFK, and the Unspeakable. The U.S. Department of State, they were reading about the new pandemic response plan from FEMA and Homeland Security that basically says they're going to let the elderly and sick and poor die. The Virginia Information Technology Agency, Virginia.gov, VITA, they Googled Internet 2 and freedom. Solomon Incorporated, of course, we mentioned the Solomon Brothers building, World Trade Center Building 7. They Googled the elitist menace among us, which we listened to. The headquarters of the U.S. AAISC in Arizona, they hit me up from a link on blacklistednews.com. We also had the Army Barracks in Auburn, Alabama. They Googled spy cameras that can see through clothing. And they are not exactly spy cameras. They are part of the TSA's security measures that are popping up in airports all around the country. Boy, I really look forward to that this summer when a picture of me and my girlfriend go through and you're totally naked. And they're going in airports all over the place. Check it out. Our good friends at Raytheon, part of the criminal military-industrial complex, one of their places in Germany hit me up with no reference, which is on StatCounter. It basically says, I don't know how they got this link, which basically means somebody passed it to them or something like that. They didn't just Google it. They were reading about the software update that, of course, shut down the nuclear plant. We, again, had Army headquarters in Arizona. They hit me up from orblogs.com, and they read about the software update. We had pals themselves Googling JFK and the Unspeakable, Portland, and so they chased their tail and found my posting about their event. And finally, the Aberdeen Proving Ground in Maryland, Edgewood Arsenal, you should know it well, Aberdeen Proving Ground and the Edgewood Arsenal, you better check it out, they landed on MediaMonarchy.com after Googling future combat systems. And if you don't know what FCS is, again, I implore you to check it out. Lastly, before I wrap it up, give you a couple personal notes. My man Jeff from the Wall Street Traders sent me a nice note through MySpace. I won't get into all of it here, but brother, I'd like to have a beer with you too. And as I mentioned, looking forward with dread to some of that summer travel through the TSA thugs. Going to be traveling around a bit this summer. I will still do episodes regardless of where I am because I can still upload them and have you guys check them out. So there may be an episode that happens from somewhere in Eastern Oregon in a week or so, and there may be some episodes that happen from the East Coast in my old town of Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Hopefully going to try and barge into WSHC 89.7 FM and do a Media Monarchy on the FM airwaves, and I'll have to watch my fucking mouth. So hopefully there'll be extra episodes and hopefully some web stuff and maybe even some new launches and some new ideas coming soon. Maybe a new website and maybe a chance for you to participate. But that's all I'm going to say right now. And that's the end of episode 79, June 13th, 2008. My name's James Evan Filato. This has been MediaMonarchy.com. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not or not, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.